This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Welcome to The Interface, the show that decodes the tech that's rewiring your week and your world. On this week's episode, we look at how people are hooked on juicy storylines with AI fruit. Is big tech having its big tobacco moment? And is there going to be a kill switch in your new internet router? Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, it's Lucy here. I hope you're enjoying Lady Killers. It was such a great series to make and I learned such a lot. This is an extra episode for you. Something a bit different as there are no ladies present today. I am talking to fellow historian and podcaster Greg Jenner, who I can tell you from personal experience is the kindest man in history. We talked about his fabulous BBC Radio 4 podcast, You're Dead to Me. And we also discussed his time on Horrible Histories and lots of other things too. You can find You're Dead to Me on BBC Sounds. But first, here's some of our conversation. So, Greg, can you believe you've done 5 series now of You're Dead to Me? How many episodes is that?
Honestly, I've lost
You've
track.
You've lost count. So many.
I think there's probably, at time of recording, there's probably about 67 available.
67?
That's my guess.
Wow.
But by the end of this series, we'll be up to nearly 80, I think.
That's two solid working weeks worth of You're Dead to Me. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, hopefully people don't do that because that's a very tiring binging session. But yeah, no, we've been making it since 2019 and... And delighted it's people still want to listen, which is very nice.
And what stands out for you in series 5, which is the one that's in progress at the moment? What are your secret favourites? You're not allowed to have favourites, are you? Which ones would you put forward in the secret favourite category, were you allowed to do so?
Were I allowed to do so? I mean, so episode 1 of series 5, we had Stephen Fry as a guest, who is every inch the most remarkable man in, you know, and I've worked with him a few times, but every single time, I'm just astonished by how much he knows and how funny he is and how charming. And also very kind and generous and very, very nice. And we were discussing Frederick the Great of Prussia, who was gay. And, you know, this is something that people don't often think about. 18th century gay kings, certainly a famous warrior too. He was this incredible military titan. So having Stephen on with our brilliant expert in Germany, Dr. Bodie Ashton, was a really lovely experience for me to be in a room with a man I grew up, you know, deeply worshipping his work, and then also to be talking about this really extraordinary guy from the 18th century who not many people know about, but it's one of our best episodes, I think, and yeah, it's definitely just a sort of pinch yourself moment for me.
Fabulous. You have to skip across so many centuries. This is what I can't get my head around. Do you enjoy that? Do you like going into ancient history and modern history and all the bits in between?
Yes, it's the thing I love the most, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as a historian, I tend to call myself a public historian, and I always, even as a history student, bounced all over the place, and I did archaeology and history undergraduate and a master's in medieval studies, and now these days I'm sort of almost more of an 18th century specialist, and I think the thing that's joyful for me is the fact that there's just all this history all over the place, all over the world, going all the way back to the Stone Age, and these stories don't often get told, and I have this lovely little platform where I get to, every week, me and my brilliant team, we get to sort of say, right, this week we're off to China, we're off to Persia, we're off to, you know, India or the Aztecs or North America or the Viking land, and we're going to talk about something you maybe have heard of or maybe just never even thought about, and the story's going to be funny and fascinating, you're going to learn a lot, and it's going to help make sense of the modern world. But it's also just going to be interesting in its own right. That is brilliant fun for me, and it's it means I get to always be learning too, which is lovely.
Every day
is
a school day in the world of history and historians. Yeah. So what are the weirdest places or periods that you go to in series 5? What does it cover? When you were talking about the Vikings and so on, were they series 5 things coming up?
We did them a little bit earlier. No, series 5 we are, goodness me, so we've done ancient Athenian democracy. Which is a story that people might know a little bit about. We know the word democracy, right? We tend to think we belong in a democracy, but the ancient Greeks would not call us a democracy at all. But we are doing some quite some kooky stuff. We're doing the history of timekeeping technology and the culture and sociology of timekeeping. So how we tell the time, how it's changed through history, the history of clocks and sundials and all sorts. That's really fascinating. We are looking at a few sort of characters from history that you might not have heard of. So Ibn Battuta, who's a medieval Islamic traveller who travelled vast number of miles, thousands of miles around the world and wrote about his stories. We're looking at the Terracotta Warriors, the ancient Chinese first emperor's famous army that guards him in his tomb. We looked at the Bayeux Tapestry, the thousand-year-old, not a tapestry, it's an embroidery, that shows us the events of 1066 and the Battle
Listeners
of Hastings.
Listeners need to know, by the way, I've listened to this episode, they do speculate about how many penises it includes.
There are a lot of penises on that tapestry, I'm afraid to say. And it's, again, not a tapestry, embroidery. It's very, there is some penis chat, I'm sorry. We are a comedy show, so we're always going to have naughty chat when we can. We're doing an episode on the black community in 18th century London. So we're looking at people like Olodo Equiano and Ignatius Sancho and Mary Prince and the fact that black history doesn't start with Windrush. You know, there were 15,000 people at least in the sort of 1750s and 60s and probably more so in the early 1800s. So what we try and do on the show is every week it's something completely different to last week, often telling the stories that aren't told that much, but with a funny approach.
Now, this funny approach then, what's going on there then? This is a theme with you. You've always worked in a sort of comedy history crossover way, haven't you?
I love comedy. I've always loved comedy. I couldn't afford my PhD, but it would have been on 13th century comedy. I'm fascinated by the mechanics of jokes and how they work. And Horrible Histories was an amazing opportunity for me. I was only 25 when I got that job and I did it for 13 years. It was a children's comedy show, sketch comedy show in the sort of in the vein of Monty Python, but sort of drawing on Blackadder and these shows that I grew up absolutely obsessed with as a kid. And comedy is an amazing way of communicating the complexity of the past because it allows you to breathe, it allows you to enjoy yourself, it allows you to relax and also to pull ideas apart. You know, you can dismantle ideas and sort of go, well, that's silly, that's, you know. And so it's a really good teaching tool. It's very, very effective. And it's great for children. It's great for people who, you know, my podcast, You're Dead to Me, is mostly aimed at people for whom history was something they didn't enjoy at school. And then they've reached a point in life where they suddenly go, oh no, I've missed out. This amazing, vast repository of knowledge, but now I'm ready. And so the podcast we do is sort of trying to give people a way back in. And humour and laughter is such a nice way to enjoy it. It's such a pleasurable way, of course it is, but it also really helps you remember it. A good joke is so much more memorable than an interesting fact. And a good song on Horrible Histories is so much memorable than, you know, a bit of dialogue between two kings or whatever. So I find comedy to be so much more effective, actually, sometimes than doing things straight. So it's not that I'm an idiot. I am an idiot, but it's more than that. It's really powerful.
Sometimes when people meet me for the first time, they say, ooh, do you enjoy dressing up? And yes, I do. But I think that you've done a little bit of that in your Horrible Histories career too. Am I right? What characters have you been?
This is obviously audio, so people can't see, but I look like a medieval peasant. I have sort of dishevelled written across my face and bearded and long curly hair, and I look like a human weasel. So I often play the role of medieval peasant number three, covered in goat poo. But I have had a couple of very fun opportunities. I got to play Emperor Nero's historian in the Horrible Histories movie, which is an in-joke that nobody got, but my mum enjoyed it. So I got to play a historian on screen in a toga, but usually I'm just background extra number four because I'm a terrible actor, Lucy. I am not skilled in any way in doing anything other than talking about history.
Do you remember the time when you all came to Hampton Court to film the Charles II rap, where he raps about all of his mistresses? Well, we were in the curator's office watching this particular episode, and there's a point where Charles II leaps up on the table and everybody in the room shouted, not that table! That's a priceless artifact! But please tell me that you switched it out before filming began and put in a stunt table.
I think there was some protective coverings were put down, I believe.
Oh, yes, yes, it was all absolutely fine. I'm making a big fuss over nothing.
But I think the gorgeous tapestries hung from the walls, I think there was quite a lot of concern about those and our sort of very hot lights and making sure we weren't damaging the embroideries.
Yeah. You're hinting at the sort of hard work that has to go in behind the scenes when you're doing your effortlessly funny locking about. Would you describe it as hard work, what you do, midnight oil? Lot of reading?
Yeah, it's a vast amount of work. Horrible Histories was an incredible amount of work for, I mean, the first 5 years of the show. I was the only historian on the entire team. I was responsible for all of the factual information in the series. And You're Dead to Me, I've got amazing producer, Emma. She writes the show with me. We've got an assistant producer, Emmy. And we have PhD students who come and research the series with us every series. We have 5 PhD students per series who do a funded placement through their universities. And they come and they work on 3 episodes each. And we've got Abby, who's our audio editor. And then I'm, you know, hosting the show. I co-write the show and I co-edit the show afterwards, you know, when it comes to choosing what goes out. It's this enormous thing that takes months and months and months of work. And the lovely thing is when people say, oh, it sounds like you had you just had a chat for an afternoon. It's like, no, it took weeks and weeks and weeks of planning because we take it really seriously. And there's a sort of difference between the approach in that the comedian gets dropped in at the last minute with no planning at all. They have no idea what's happening. We tell them the name of the episode, nothing else. They have no notes, no jokes. They just have to sink or swim. Mm. But the historian, our expert guest, we've been talking to them for weeks. Mm. You know, we'd have done a 90-minute Zoom call. We would our PhD researchers then do 10,000 words of detailed notes. They go off and read journal articles and PhD theses and books, and they put together these notes. Then we do 4 or 5 drafts of the script. We run it past the historian constantly. And only then, once we're happy, do we then record the show and drop in our comedian who has to be funny off the cuff. Mm. So it's this amazing combination of spontaneity and planning. Mm. And it takes about 8 months to make a series. It's a huge amount of work.
Goodness me. Which is the very, very most enjoyable bit for you?
Well, the thing I loved the most about it, and the thing I always knew was a thing that I'd spotted and no one else had quite spotted, is that comedians and historians are really similar. Present some information to a historian and a comedian, both of them will pull it apart and go, but why? I don't trust this. Where did you hear this from? Really? Is that true? What if this was different? Hmm. And it's a really intriguing thing. So the thing I love the most about You're Dead to Me is a spell about 10 to 15 minutes into our recording, when everyone's just relaxed enough, and the comedian sort of pipes up with a few jokes and the historian sort of relaxes. And there's a sort of moment where both guests suddenly clock that the other one is quite similar to them and that they've got a lot in common and this is going to be fine. And that's brilliant. I love that. I never get tired of that.
How do you pick the comedians? Obviously, you pick the historians because they know their history and they've devoted a lifetime to it.
That's right. We start with the historians first, and that's the most important thing, is finding the historians who are excellent broadcasters, who are experts in their field, who are going to be funny and patient and generous with their time and won't be intimidated by being in a room with a comedian. So that's a huge amount of it. And then you're looking for a comedian who's going to be respectful, who's going to be funny, who's going to enjoy it, who's going to be truly curious, who might have a link to the subject. They may have a family heritage or they might share something. You know, if you're doing a biography, they might have a part of their life that feels similar. And you're looking for someone who's going to have great chemistry. So we're often trying, it's almost like matchmaking. You're almost trying to put together 2 people who've never met and just hope that they're going to get on. And yeah, luckily, we've not had any sort of terrible misfires. It's all been great. So it's lovely when you see these relationships spark up. And everyone's having a lovely time, laughing and joking. But also the comedians so often ask amazingly perceptive questions that the historian has never been asked in 20 years of studying this subject. So it's not just a case of the comedians being silly and just trying to make things, you know, a bit funny. Quite often the comedians will ask a question that stumps all of us and we go, ah, don't know. Good point. We'll look that up. Which is, again, because comedians and historians share this worldview.
I guess you're talking about geeks in general.
Maybe.
People listening to this will be amazed by the amount of detailed work that you put in to make it look so easy. And I can share with our listeners an anecdote about what a detail maniac Greg Jenner is. Do you remember that time when we were in a history quiz show that was going to be about the Tudors? And
terrifying.
We knew that there was going to be a round with mystery objects, which is actually one of the things that we do when people come to apply for jobs to be curators at Hampton Court. We show them a mystery object and we ask them to describe what it is. Anyway, we knew that this round was coming up. And Greg here thought, where are they going to get the objects from? I know, they're going to get them from the Mary Rose Museum in Southampton. And Greg actually went to Southampton and he visited the Mary Rose Museum to see what objects were missing from the cases. And you successfully deduced which ones they had brought to the studios to be the mystery objects, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I used to be a TV producer, so I know how
you
they
knew
think.
How it works.
And so I gamed the system. I was so terrified of being on television, Lucy. I was so scared. It was my first time on TV. You're all so experienced, and I was sort of, you know, absolutely nervous with anxiety. And so I thought, right, I need to just go to a museum and memorize everything in that museum. And I went around sort of trying to remember absolutely everything I saw. But I spotted a few things missing and went, ah, ha, 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 I know what that will be.
That is the level of dedication, people, that has gone into You're Dead to Me. And if you're ready to take the plunge and listen to You're Dead to Me for the first time, I so recommend that you do. You can find it on BBC Sounds.
Welcome to The Interface, the show that decodes the tech that's rewiring your week and your world. On this week's episode, we look at how people are hooked on juicy storylines with AI fruit. Is big tech having its big tobacco moment? And is there going to be a kill switch in your new internet router? Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.